Now, it's time for the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin.
Cybersecurity News Bite, episode number 86. For April 28th, 2025, cookie bite attacks, emerging threat from cloud and MFA security, Lazarus strikes before you update, hackers exploit Cloudflare tunnels to infiltrate systems, and Rootkit's TikTok takedown. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I am your host, Jim Guckin, once again bringing you the news stories I think you need to be paying attention from the last week. A couple of interesting good ones coming up. One we've talked about before, which is a vector of attack that we've had before. But first one here is kind of somewhat interesting. It's talking about an attack they're calling Cookie Bite. And Cookie Bite's an attack from a sophisticated threat group that enables attackers to bypass your multi-factor authentication, the thing I tell you to worry about all the time. They bypass that and maintain persistence to cloud environments. And they do this kind of by hijacking the authentication cookie, particularly those made by Azure Entra ID, formerly Azure Active Directory. And attackers can then impersonate users and access services like 365, anything in your Azure environment, without needing the credentials, because they have the cookie, and the cookie pretends like it is your credentials. It says, hey, I'm this person. And it's a new popular way. If they can steal your cookies, they can pretend, and not just the stories about Azure, but it's not the only area and they can do this. Any site that you have a cookie from someone, you can pretend to be that person. But in this particular story we're talking about, it focuses on two different kinds of cookies. There's the ESTS auth and ESTS auth persistent. So kind of should it tell you what these kind of cookies are made for. I mean, the ESTS probably doesn't give away, but the persistence is probably the one that tells you that over a period of time, they maintain full rights to pretend to be you. It's the persistent cookie. The ESTS auth is your current session. The one once you log in says, hey, you are here. That's the one that is ESTS auth. Now, on the other hand, the persistent one, this is the one that stays in after you close your browser. This one stays there longer, easier to pretend to be you. First one, it's only the session you're in. The persistent one can go as long as your session's allowed to continue through this kind of persistence. So how they do this can vary. Once again, these are not new tactics. One of them being kind of doing a man-in-the-middle attacks. They use some kind of reverse proxy to intercept cookies in real time. So you log into a page, but it's not really the page. It's being presented as the page, and it's really being a proxy for their service proxying the page you want. So this is more kind of the ones you'll see with phishing attacks. Now, if they get onto your physical machine, there's a way of just dumping those processes and extracting the cookies from that from your browser. There's another way that's kind of been popping up recently, which is they make you kind of download a malicious browser extension. It doesn't matter what browser you have there. All browsers have malicious extensions that can be there. And this allows them to constantly abuse your browser to give them the cookies they need. So once it's the browser instance is installed, all they need to do is they just continuously extract fresh cookies every time there's a termination in it. Same as if they have some malware that's dumping the cookies from your system. As long as it's running there, then they're good enough to do whatever they want to do. The first one, the man in the middle, they're using proxy tools. You kind of have to be on their site to utilize it. But the other ones they can use as much as they want. So how do you protect against this particular kind of attack? Monitor user behavior. Make sure that they're not logging in. Some of them are not or using browsers they may not normally use. So by monitoring user sessions, you can look for some unusual behavior. If your system has it, Microsoft does have this, risk detection, where it will look for risky kind of sign-in events. Once again, kind of the same thing on the back end, determines a baseline for that user and figures out what's risky and what's not. Conditional access policies, which enforce logins from specific devices or specific IP addresses. That way, even if someone steals your browser, they can't access it unless they are coming from that particular area. Restrict any kind of browser extension. This is specifically about ones that will, kind of sit on your browser and steal those sessions as they come in. You can also use token protection. There's some applications that let you protect the token, the session, the cookie, and prevent them from being stolen so they cannot be reused by others. Another thing, make sure you have things up to date. That way you're not getting malware. And also make sure you have some kind of good antivirus program or anti-malware program or end user detection response or endpoint detection response systems. All that will help protect against some of these. It won't get against enough. Web filtering, look for malicious domains, threat intelligence stuff. All this will give you that kind of intelligence to do it. Nothing's going to be foolproof because there's a lot of ways this attack can happen. But it's an attack they quite do often. So the more layered approach you have, the better off it's going to be. For our second story this week, talking about a very scary group of individuals, Lazarus Group, which is the North Korean state-sponsored advanced persistent threat group. They're launching a cyber attack right now, targeting critical infrastructure, financial organizations right now across Asia, Europe, and North America. And they've been doing this since the beginning of the year. They've been exploiting recently patched vulnerabilities. And I know you're thinking, but that's why we patch, so we're not vulnerable. And yes, so there's 0 days, which everyone's aware of, which is there is a attack against something that has no patch to it yet. Patching recently disclosed vulnerabilities with recent patches is typically known as a one-day vulnerability, meaning it's one off than a 0 day. It's a 1 day, meaning before organizations can implement the updates, but the update is available, they attack. Now, this strategy has allowed them to compromise networks in sectors such as financial services, energy infrastructure, resulting right now in damages exceeding $14 million. And it's kind of clever, but kind of a pain in the butt as well. Which is why, as any security professional will tell you, it's best to patch as soon as possible. Literally as soon as possible. Because, you know, you had people who hope that you don't patch, and that's what they struggle with, or their attack vector is. But a patch available that you haven't applied yet, as a security professional, I think that stings more. Like, there was help. You could have defended yourself, and you just took time to test things out or gave yourself a little room to know more about the patch, and that's where it stings. So, Lazarus has been targeting vulnerabilities that have been disclosed and patched, but yet not widely implemented. The critical window between patch release and widespread deployment provides attackers with an opportunity to exploit systems while we scramble to defend ourselves. Now, the primary vector of attack they're using right now is CVE-2025-1234, which is a critical vulnerability in a widely used enterprise VPN solution. They send a specifically crafted request file in HTTP containing a messed up authentication packet. This triggers a buffer overflow condition that allows them to kind of run their own code and, you know, gain access to the affected system. So once they're in, what do? First thing most smart groups will do is try to gain persistence. So after they gain the access, they deploy custom malware that establishes persistence through modifying services, modifying entries, modifying the registry, and they do one or multiple in hopes that it will survive any kind of reboot or any. If you find one, they have other methods out there. Once they know that you can't really easily kick them out of your systems, the next thing they do is start to move laterally. They start looking through the network, they find other weaknesses and exploit and compromise other systems. Some of the malware they're using too, kind of evades detections, including they have multi-stage loaders to decrypt and encrypt and execute files only after they make sure they're not in a sandbox, meaning a honeypot system you may have running there. And then once the systems are sure they're fine, they're running, they make sure their persistence is there, they've compromised a couple different machines, they connect to their command and control server using HTTPS traffic. They don't want you to be able to read it in plain text. They at least use security. And they kind of talk to legitimate looking domains. I mean, granted, they're probably not ones you're used to seeing, but they're probably domains that you would, at first glance, not pay a whole bunch of attention to. So, in their exploitation of this, I wish I'd go through what CVE 2025-1234 is. The time I'm recording this, there's not a lot of information about it. I mean, there's the article talking about it, but it's not telling you what the vulnerability is and what systems it's at. So hopefully when I get more information, I'll be able to update the show notes available on cybersecuritynewsbyte.com so you can find more information about this. But right now, we just know it's a popular VPN system. And there's a patch available. You just got a patch. So to defend yourself, patch. Just as simple as that, patch. Outside of that, make sure your network's segmented. Make it harder for them to traverse your network easily. Look for IOCs. Once again, use some good threat intelligence feeds. Try to get this down there. As always, make sure you're employees are trained about cybersecurity and phishing campaigns so they can't come in that way. And make sure that if something does happen, you're ready to respond and quickly mitigate any systems that may be infected. I wish we can go more into this. I wish I had more information about it. It was a great story, and I wanted to talk about the, you know, because people hear 0 days. People hear, they targeted something that was patched last year, and maybe people didn't just apply the patch. But 1 days are not often do you hear them in the news. But there is, for most organizations, there is a time frame in which a patch is released before a patch can be deployed. Some companies only have one patch day a month, meaning that's a plenty of time where people can tack that. And being this is a popular VPN thing, most big corporations have it and probably haven't patched quickly enough. So number one thing, patch. Patch as quickly as you can. As often as you can. And it's not for everyone. You can't do it every second a patch comes out, but the sooner the better. For our third story this week, it's a story we've talked about in pieces before, which is using hackers are using Cloudflare tunneling to infiltrate systems. We've talked about in the past where they've used these Cloudflare tunnels to, you know, make direct command and control systems or take files out without being seen. So it's not a new tactic. It's just it's made its round again. And cyber criminals are increasingly using Cloudflare tunnel infrastructure to deliver remote access Trojans like Async Rat, Xworm, or Venom Rat, Rat being remote access tools, by leveraging the Tri Cloudflare service. Attackers can create temporary anonymous tunnels that typically, you're bypassing your typical security measures. And so we've seen this before. It's not a new tactic. It's coming around. And because they can bypass most of your normal bells and whistles, it's dangerous. So it starts like a lot of other attacks by phishing emails. They send a phishing email with a malicious attachment, often disguised as an invoice or a some other thing that makes you want to click it quickly. The attachments use a application Windows library plus XML file format. Once again, designed to bypass your security gateways. It establishes a remote connection through the WebDAV resource and is hosted on the Cloudflare infrastructure. Once again, if they get caught, if they get found out, it gets taken away, but it's anonymous anyway, so they don't really care. So the actual infection is kind of multi-step. The user interacts with the link file, disguised as a PDF document. The shortcut executes an HTA file from the remote server. The HTA file runs a batch script that installs Python and executes some obfuscated Python code. That code injects the next payload into notepad.exe processes. So once again, all designed to kind of go away, because if you see Notepad running, that's not suspicious. And once it's running, it's there. It's running now, so it now goes for persistence. It creates startup entries with VBS and batch files in the Windows Startup folder, someplace that, you know, early malware or early security people are familiar with and they can kind of deal with. It's one of the places I check, but it's because I grew up in the era where that was big for early malware. The final stages uses PowerShell to load a payload from a JPEG image. That image is not really an image. I mean, it might have an image to it, but it's really a code base. And then it talks out to its command and control server. Attackers are leveraging domains with trycloudflare.com. This is all to hide their stuff. Hint, hint, maybe something to look for. The first part of the subdomain, though, would obviously be unique for them. And trycloudflare is generally a trusted domain, so it wouldn't go off of any IOCs that you would be familiar with. So how can you defend yourself against this kind of attack? Phishing, train users, have good email filtering in place, have your endpoint detection and response solution there so that if something runs, it might catch part of it. Network monitoring, look for any unusual patterns or unusual websites that people are going to. If you can, whitelist applications. It's a dream of mine. I've never got it in any organization I work for, but it is a dream I want to get to one day where I work for somewhere that we can only run applications that are approved. Hence, stop that. And make sure you're always running regular updates. Just from the last story, it makes sense to kind of make sure your stuff is up to date as much as possible. For our final story this week is about TikTok. You know, that thing that everyone, millennials, Gen X, everyone below has, and they pretend like they don't ever go on it. I'm on TikTok occasionally. And by occasionally, I mean at least an hour a day. But anyway, a hacking group known as Rootkit, with a one instead of an I in Rootkit, claimed responsibility for a significant data breach of TikTok, allegedly exposing over 900,000 user credentials. The group has released a sample of the data, saying that they've done it and showing kind of proof of it. They are asserting that they previously warned TikTok and its parent company ByteDance about a security vulnerability, but they didn't receive a response. So they released the first 900,000 and claim that they will release more sensitive information in the future. Rootkit claims to have accessed an insecure cloud server containing the user credentials and platform code. I'm hoping this isn't like one of those events where someone forgot to configure a dev server and they have all the username and passwords on there for testing and it was accessed that way, but you never know, it could be. Hackers allegedly extracted usernames, passwords, and potentially other sensitive information from the TikTok's backend system. As I said, there was a sample of 927,000 user records released on the dark web, just to show that they have what they want. They're saying they're going to release more. And I wish I had more to the story than that. That's the breadth of the story. But I want you to be proactive on this. If you have a corporate or if you have a personal one, either way, this is something you need to pay attention to. You need to defend yourself. So first thing I would do, and first thing I did when I heard the story, was immediately change my TikTok password. Make sure it's nothing like the previous password. I want to hope that you're using at least different passwords on every site, but definitely change your password. Enable the two-factor authentication. That way, even if they have your username and password, they still can't get in without your second factor. Another thing about this, and it's not readily clear on this, but I often see this pop up after some major breaches like this, is be aware of phishing. They have usernames, they have passwords, they may have more sensitive information. If this information is out there, a lot of malicious people will go and use this to phish with more gravitas because they have information that can convince you that they are who they claim they are. So, especially watch out for anyone pretending to be TikTok, but in general, be on the lookout for phishing stuff. Check Have I Been Pwned? .com see if your email, phone number, link to TikTok has been part of the breach when that information comes out. I'm assuming by the time I'm recording this that Have I Been Pwned will have the information up shortly if it's available on the dark web. They usually are pretty quick on this, so make sure you check that website. Watch your TikTok account for strange activity, things that maybe you follow, unfollow, messages you may be getting replies to that you never did, stuff like that. Just keep an eye out for weird stuff along those lines. If you have a linked TikTok account, meaning you use Facebook, Google, or Apple to sign into those, make sure you refresh your security settings or passwords on those services as well. Maybe they could have siphoned that. I haven't seen the data, so just be cautious and change as many passwords that are close to that as possible. In managing passwords, always recommend using a password manager. Bitwarden, LastPass, 1Password. Make sure that password's not easy to guess and you don't use it anywhere else so that they can't use it in a breach against you. But I'm kind of curious to see where this story falls out over the next week. So keep an eye out for it because I'm curious to what it is. But they have shown that they have it. From what I've heard, once again, have not seen it directly myself. I've heard that it looks legitimate. And that should concern you. So make sure you're protecting yourself and you're protecting your corporate accounts by using strong passwords, different passwords for every site, multi-factor authentication where you can. That should be standard nowadays. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Once again, if you want to learn more about the stories I'm talking about, you can go on cybersecuritynewsbyte.com for this episode. There are show notes there. You can see all the news stories and some of the notes that I use to do the show. So you can do some research yourself and find some more information. Maybe they will have updates where I don't. If you want to learn more about me, you can go to my website, jimguckin.com. It has my information up there as well. If you want to talk, have questions, comments, concerns, you can always find me on all social medias, usually Jim Guckin. Or you can email me at jimguckin.com. Always glad to talk to people. Make sure you stay safe. Protect yourself. Stay safe online. And we'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin. Learn more about our show at cybersecuritynewsbite.com.